Monster Movie Media presents. And welcome to episode 34 of the Creepy Kingdom podcast, a podcast all about the creepiness of the Disney films and theme parks. I am your host, Mr. James H. Carter II. Coming up in this episode, I have a conversation with artist Gust Fink and Emmy Boz. They're here to talk about their cute yet creepy interpretations of our favorite Disney characters. But before we jump to that, Annie from Annie and Danny's Fast Pass podcast has a special message for you.
Hey, you know what's a really cool thing to do? You know what is probably the coolest thing you can possibly do? You know what will probably be the coolest thing you ever do in your life? The answer is the Creepy Fast Pass Meetup. It is going to be the coolest thing in the world. It's September 26th at Cruise Cup at the Yacht Club Resort. There's going to be alcohol, and there's going to be me and James, and there's going to be just anything cool you can possibly think of. We'll be there. I don't know if you know that James and I are, like, really, really cool. Like, maybe the coolest people ever. But you won't know that unless you come to the Creepy Fast Pass meetup. So you should come. Definitely come. You will not regret it. I promise you. Like, you've probably regretted things in your life, but this is not one of those things that you'll regret. You know, I know it sounds creepy and fast, but it won't be either of those things. It'll just be awesome. So come, for sure.
That's right. The Creepy Fast Pass meetup is going down September 26th, 8 p.m. at Cruise Cup at the Yacht Club Resort in Walt Disney World in Orlando, Florida. To RSVP, all you gotta do is go to creepyfastpassmeetup.rsvpify.com and you'll be all RSVP'd up. Well, without any further ado, let's begin. Right, I'm here with artist Gust Fink.
That's me.
And sorry, I wasn't expecting that. And Emmy Boz.
Hello.
How are you two doing this evening?
Doing great. How are you doing, James?
Excellent. I'm excited. I'm pumped to talk about both of your artwork. This is a first for me. I'm interviewing two people at once, so this is you know, I'll try to do my best here.
Double doozer.
Yeah. Don't worry. We won't talk at the same time.
Good.
We're Siamese couple.
Yeah.
Siamese couple. Wow. So, I guess there's the cat's out of the bag with there. You're also, not only are you both artists, you're married. You're a married artist team.
Yep.
So that's got to be pretty exciting, huh?
Yeah, it's really exciting. We never fight and we always get along.
I'm sure. All right, well, before we derail too much, why don't both of you explain your individual art styles?
When it comes to me, when I approach a new painting, I just like to surprise myself. Kind of, it's almost like watching a TV show. You want to be entertained. Mm-hmm. So when I look at my paper or canvas or whatever it is, I'm just trying to entertain myself, really, and have a good time doing it. So, I mean, I never know fully what's going to come out, but sometimes I'll pick a theme like the pieces that you've seen where I'm like, oh, I'm going to make Alice in Wonderland, but I'll just, you know, still not be try to be predictable with it, or some of those other pieces that you've seen. And it's easy for me to go horrifying direction. Just a lot of existence as a kid was just filled with nightmares and horrifying visions of things. So it's like I base my work kind of skewed to that. I try to throw in a nice, cuter element too, a nice, softer element as best as I can.
So nightmarish and cute. Those are the adjectives that you use to describe your work?
Yeah, I try to mix them both up. Emmy's laughing here for some
reason.
Sorry,
I was just laughing. This is a funny picture in my head. So my work is... I always enjoy making people laugh. That's like something I really enjoy doing. So when I'm doing pieces on Disney, I've always thought it was odd how happy they always make all the Disney princesses and whatnot, hence the pictures I sent. I like creating art that people are going to connect with, but they're going to see it the same way I see it without being in your face. So I like to make things depressing but funny.
Oh, okay.
So... That's my style. It's like depressing and funny.
That's I'd say that looking at your art right now, and of course, just so listeners know, all of the pictures and all the pieces we're talking about will be in the show notes, so you know you don't have to hunt them down. But I would say that's very accurate description of your work.
Yeah, like morbidly depressing, but also hilarious. So it's like okay, you feel a little both, you go home happy.
Yeah, and sad at the same time. Yeah. Very nice. You're like, we're all empty and dark inside, and I'm going to die alone. Ha ha.
<It's kinda> yeah.
Right on, right on. So, before I ask you a little bit about what inspired your pieces, what exactly inspired you guys to do Disney in particular? What's your, or in particular, what is your connection with Disney?
Well, I mean, it's such a huge part of our pop culture, and anything like that, I try to grab onto and do my own thing with. So, you know, I went to Disney World a bunch when I was a kid. I know some people never get to, and I take my kids there. They probably went about 5 times, 6 times. And my oldest daughter's only 8, so it's part of my life, so it's going to be part of my art. And, you know, I don't want to just do their characters the way they do them and let it be that way, so I just try to tweak it and have fun, you know.
And as far as my connection with it is, pretty much what Gus said is that it's always been a part of my life, and I remember being a little girl and being like, this is awesome, I love Disney. But then as I got older, I realized some of the messages they were conveying to young girls, especially with the princesses, was kind of messed up, something you wouldn't ever tell your kids to do. Like, the Little Mermaid, for example, she's, what, she's 16, she meets a dude, she's like, that's the guy. She's like, I'm going to give up my entire life and what I do so I can get legs and hook up with this Prince Eric guy. And then he's like, cool, I like you, let's get married. And she's like, okay. And then her dad's like, that's fine, you've only went on no dates with him. You get married. Oh, have a kid. Oh, guess what? The magic wonders of the undersea ocean, they're not yours anymore. You gave up all that magic mystery for a life of having legs and a baby.
And no voice.
She gets that back at the end because Ursula's all like, oh no, I messed up.
That was a brilliant synopsis of The Little Mermaid there. You really just hit all the key points.
But like when you're a little kid, you're like, this is magical. It's so important to get married and have a baby immediately. But then like most girls my age now have like 2 kids and they're in the middle of getting a divorce or... They're like, oh, I gave up my dreams.
Well, I will say the more recent Princess films have had more positive messages.
Yeah.
So I feel like they've kind of corrected that with Tangled, Frozen, yeah. and even Princess and the Frog to a degree. But
yeah, to a degree. I mean, like, what, Rapunzel, Tangled, she still hooks up with the dude, and they're like, let's get married, because you're the first guy I saw in my life, you know, like...
But they fell in love throughout the movie.
Yeah.
It wasn't like love at first sight, you know, she hit him with a frying pan when she first saw him.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. Like, I love those movies. I watch them with my stepkids, but I just, the older ones, I guess I have more fun making fun of. The newer ones, right. You're right, they're harder to make fun of. The newer princesses, because the one's like, I don't need a husband. I'm going to be all Irish and do my
right.
own thing.
Yeah, Merida doesn't, you know, yeah. she didn't need anybody.
Yeah. He's like, my mom's a bear, whatever.
Spoiler alert.
Yeah. Oops, I mean. So.
All right.
Well, maybe not.
Maybe not. Well, let's hop into this here. I want to talk about some of the pieces here. Gus, I'm going to start with you. Actually, you did two pieces that are kind of similar that as soon as I saw it, I connected with immediately for a few reasons. The two pieces are This Used to Be My Favorite Place and Stay With Us Forever and Ever. And a description of them is they're actual, look like they're postcards from Walt Disney World.
They were like posters.
Posters, okay. That are just a collection of characters standing together that you did artwork over.
Right.
And the reason that I connected with it is that this is, it's funny enough, I want to do similar things with video and attractions. And so when I saw this, I was like, wow, this is like really close to some like visions and ideas that I had. So I thought it was really cool. So I just wanted to point that out. But regardless of me, what was your inspiration behind these two pieces?
Well, I mean, they're so happy, yet at the same time, people in costumes, no matter what, it's kind of creepy. I mean, if you're waking up in the middle of the night and you see somebody in a Goofy costume, it's probably going to be one of the most horrifying things you'll see. Or imagine you wake up even at 5:30 in the morning. It's just getting a little bit light outside. And you see someone on the front porch or back porch in a Donald Duck costume waving at you. I mean, that's really horrifying.
Yeah,
right?
you would so not feel safe.
There's that aspect to it. And then also, as a kid... You know, I would always think when I was younger, like, what is the greatest place to go to in the entire, like, where is the place to go? And you probably would think Disney World. And now it's not, I don't feel that, you know, I don't want to ruin it for my kids, so I still take them. But it kind of gets old real fast for me. And so, yeah, This Used to Be My Favorite Place is like, when I was 5, it was great. Now I just kind of see it as this, the darker twist to it, you know, the more disturbing things about it. And not to say I don't have a good time when I'm there with my children. I still do, but I like to always look at both sides of things.
Yeah, like you get to see the people that clean up the park. You see the sad, broken expression on their faces. Like when you're little, you don't pick up on that stuff. But being an adult, you see like the people selling sodas like, have a magical day. They keep me here as prisoner.
Well, right, that's another thing, too. When we go now, I get this meal plan. And, I, you know, I was new to it. My friend told me about how great it is. So you go there and they give you this cup. And it's the cup you keep and always have to have so you can get refills wherever you go. But everyone's Disney. It's like you're staying in Disney hotels. And... I felt like it was sort of like a happy concentration camp to a degree, just because like we're all thrown in there and we can't leave really. Cause,
yeah.
You know, it's just like,
well, you know, I got, you know, you can leave.
Well, yeah, but
you can, yeah. But it just seems very like we're all in this
it
together.
Seems like you can't. Like it seems like it's like you'll wait in line, you get your food when from with your little wristband and.
Yeah, you get your food with your wristband, like, and like you gotta wait in line long for food, and
Wow, this is a very interesting perception of Walt Disney World.
You're like sweating. There's no shade anywhere. You end up having to carry the kids on your back, and they're sweating and making you even worse. And you're just like, I hope I don't die tonight. You know, like
you're waiting like 3 hours in the line, and the kid's not even happy because you're waiting so long. You're like, enjoy it. Fun.
Well, just to cut in here, I can give you some tips right there just to make your time a little bit easier and more enjoyable. First of all, don't ever get the Disney Dining Plan. It's kind of a ripoff because there's no way no one's ever going to eat as much food as you've already prepaid for.
Right.
Especially your kids, because kids usually don't eat as much.
Yeah.
And you have to leave Walt Disney World, and you have to go to Universal Studios next time.
Yeah, that's what everybody was telling us that was there. They were like, did you go to Universal? And we were like, no.
Well, my kids are kind of horrified by it for some reason.
Oh, yeah, they are horrified by it. Like, what was it? What was there? And they were like, no, please.
They just think it's too extreme. They even didn't want to go to... Last time I took them, they didn't want to go to the, what's it called?
Hollywood Studios.
Hollywood Studios.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
They didn't want to do that. And I was like, what are you talking about? I was like, we have to go there. It's got Star Wars.
And they were like, no, it's got the Tower of Terror. No. I was like, it's not going to grow legs and chase
Great.
You.
They are little girls.
Yeah.
Well, you got to bring them to the studios. I don't know if you did or not, but they do have Toy Story Midway Mania, which is a must for kids. So, and one of my favorite things to do too. There, so.
I took them there 2 years ago, and they seemed to like it, but they did not want to go back this year. So
we accidentally put one of them on the Tower of Terror, and I think she was under the height requirement at the time, and no one stopped it. And it was kind of funny, like, the picture you saw of her, like, kind of rising out of her seat as it dropped. So I think that just stuck with her.
Yeah, I guess so.
So, this is your fault. This isn't everyone else's fault.
might slightly be our fault with that one, so. But
to get back on topic about the piece, and actually about your perception, it's kind of interesting that the quote-unquote magic is gone. And you see it in a different way, but that you kind of view it, I take it you kind of view that way, you view it as negative? Or is it just a different perception?
I mean, just a different perception. Like, you know, there's a lot I love about Disney for the fact that one guy was able to grow this big, massive thing, even though he wasn't an artist, but people give him credit that he was. And it's just, I love that he was able to grow this huge thing, you know, because I work really hard at what we do, and we both work hard, and we're trying to grow our own thing, and, you know, I would love to work with Disney one day. It would be a dream come true, make a Pixar movie or something, but at the same time, you know, I like to see both sides of things. If everyone's seeing something very happy, to me, it's obvious to look at the messed up way of seeing it, you know, to just flip it. So, I always have my goggles on for that, whether it's, you know, we're on a flight going to Disney World and we look at those magazines that they give you and it's all about shopping, you know, those weird shopping magazines on a plane.
Yeah, Sky Mall thingies, yeah.
Yeah, so we'll take pens and just these happy pictures of people, and I just like to mess with it, make them say a weird message while there's a dog looking at them for a treat or whatever it is.
Right.
And there is a slight humor to what I bring when it is these dark pieces as well. I definitely think they are funny to a slight degree as well. So it's like, you know, like Emmy said, it's good to bring something horrifying and kind of funny to something that most people see as bright and happy and jolly. So,
yeah.
Well, sure. I mean, obviously the angle of this show in particular is close to that. Cause my view is I like to take things that people think are happy and nice and funny and give them a different, you know, do a different take on it. But I also think that the dark and creepiness stuff is always there in Disney. It's from the very beginning, you know. Like it's not something, when you think of Disney stuff, you think of the happy princess stuff. But if you sit down and watch Snow White, you know, it's pretty horrifying, you know, like Heart in a Box, the creepy woods, the dungeon with the, you know, the corpses laying around. It's,
yeah.
Like, it's always been there. So that's kind of my opinion. And that's the agenda that I like to push. You know?
Oh, definitely. Yeah, you're absolutely right. I mean, even that film alone, You know, I heard numerous stories of how that was like a sweatshop for 3 years to get that movie made. You know, it was a big gamble for Disney, and he had people working nonstop, like 16, 18-hour days, because he wanted to film out, and there wasn't crazy labor laws back then. So.
No.
Yeah, so it was a lot of blood and sweat put into that film that launched pretty much everything else after it, kind of set it up.
Yeah.
For sure. All right, let's move on to another one here. Speaking of Snow White, your Snow White piece, how would you describe what's going on in this picture?
Yeah, that one is just kind of – what I did is I didn't look at Snow White for reference, but I wanted to go based in my head how I would see the whole thing, just because that way it's more of a distorted vision of what – you know, their thing is. So mm-hmm. I just kind of try to throw that onto the paper and see what I would come up with that would kind of entertain myself. But yeah, I mean, I just, the main thing I was trying to just express is like, what do I remember from this? And let me try to fit it all on here to best showcase the film. You know, I've done that with a couple different movies, Disney and non-Disney, but it's just something I do maybe once or twice a year.
Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, that's very cool. I mean, there's not too much more to say about that one besides looking at it. It's it looks it does. I hate to go into this to describe it, but it does seem a little Tim Burton-ish to me. And I hate to because it's a generic description, but I don't know if that was any type of inspiration for you or not, or that's just close to just your style.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not inspired by him, but I think what happens is, you know, he does creepy, cute, fun stuff, and I do creepy, cute, fun stuff. So it's kind of like there's that similar thing that a lot of people, whenever I go out in public at a show, people, you know, maybe three or four people will say, hey, that's like Tim Burton, or that's like Coraline, or a couple other things they reference, you know, depending on who the person is and what they see in the work. But yeah, I mean, that's definitely a compliment. He's a very talented movie director, so.
Right, yeah, and also because he's presented that style in Disney. You know, I think that's pretty obvious comparison.
Yeah, I feel like if they kept him doing what he did for Alice in Wonderland, if he did that for Snow White, I think it would probably make $500 million or $1 billion worldwide. Like, it'd be another hit, so. Well, that one, yeah, he should probably do more of those.
So that one's not on the chopping block. I'm not sure what the next Disney Tim Burton movie is, actually. I don't know. But yes, Snow White's one of the few movies that's not on the slate to become a live action movie.
Yeah.
There's a whole bunch coming. But anyways, and the other one here, you have a lightsaber battle between Mickey Mouse and Darth Vader.
Well, that was right around the time where, maybe a little bit after, where Disney bought Star Wars. And I think it wasn't, like, hugely known. I think there's even a lot of people still that don't know that for some reason, well, that Disney owns.
In the Disney community, it was huge, so I don't know, maybe it wasn't outside of it, but everyone knows that's listening to this show, for sure.
Right. So I was asked to be part of a gallery show out in California, and it was called 99 Deaths of Jar Jar Binks. I think that, is he in that piece? Or is
no,
this
that's another one. This is just Mickey and Darth Vader.
Okay, well, it's the same thing. It was like, you know, I always thought it was interesting that they bought that. I used to go to Disney World and they would sell the Star Wars toys, but they didn't own it. And I was like, that's kind of weird that they sort of have this.
Well, it's because they had the attraction, the Star Tours, that's been in the park since the 80s. So that's probably why they had the toys.
Yeah, so I looked into that, and before they actually bought the whole thing, they had rights to sell all kinds of Star Wars stuff in their parks. And that's why they would do collaborative meshes where it would be like Goofy as one of the Star Wars guys, etc.
Right.
So yeah, I thought it was kind of weird. I thought it was slightly more sad of George Lucas to give up what he created. It kind of bothered me on a deep level. You know, he built this amazing trilogy, and then he made three more movies that were and then he's like, well, I did Star Wars. I'm going to sell it for a couple billion, and I'm done. I just felt like people could do more And I mean, maybe that's just me, but I feel like, for instance, the guy who created Garfield, he made Garfield, and then I don't think he ever did anything else. It's like George Lucas could have had a massive empire beyond Star Wars. I think I know he tried a little bit with Willow and Howard the Duck and stuff, but
my opinion on this on the acquisition is I think it's for the better. I mean, we haven't seen Episode 7 yet, so that's to be determined, but I feel that the people that are working on the Star Wars stuff now care more about it than George Lucas does right now, and I think
I agree. I completely agree. I think it was a good move because he was too lazy. I think he should have done more, and he didn't. And I think he knows that, Disney's going to make this insanely big, and they could make, Boba Fett movies and whatever. Mm-hmm. They could just keep it massive. So, he did the right move, but at the same time, as an artist and a guy who creates intellectual properties, I felt like, man, it would have been kind of cool if he just built it up, if he kept going at it, if he didn't give up once he made it. I feel like that's too common of a practice where somebody, they struggle, they make it, and then they sell it off. You know what I mean? They're done. So, and I mean, right now Disney is just this massive empire. It's not one guy really. You know, it's a whole corporation. So it's just interesting. I just thought, as an artist, you know, it's a little bit saddening to hear him sell it off.
It's like selling your child to a family that's well off than you, and you know they're gonna take care of it. It's gonna have a really slamming life. But you still get $4 billion for it.
That's
a great way to look at it. Yeah, like if I sold my kids off to, I was like, well, they could do a better job than me. And here I get a couple billion, so.
Yeah, you're like, have a good life, Timmy. You're going to be swimming in a pool full of golden marshmallows.
You'll probably be the president, and that's great, but you're no longer my son.
Papa loves you, though.
Well, that's an interesting take on that. I'm not going to debate that to you, but that's your inspiration for the piece, so that's cool. So, all right, Emmy, let's move on to what's going on with your stuff over here. Now we have let's refocus for the listener. What is it? Funny yet depressing.
Depressing but funny.
Okay, so here's a depressing but funny interpretation of Cinderella. It actually kind of looks like she's like a stitched up rag doll a little bit in a way.
Yeah, a little bit. I kind of like the more darker way of making princesses look, so that gets incorporated into it. Mm-hmm. But what I like about this piece is that I feel like it's relatable. Because it's depressing and funny, it's relatable to you know, the audience that's looking at it. I feel like, because, you know, Cinderella, she has a rough life a little bit. She's cleaning, but she's still happy. She's doing her chores. She's singing. She's dancing with little animals, you know. Mm-hmm. And then she gets all dolled up, meets Prince Charming, gets married to him, but I like to think about what it's like afterwards, like after the Disney cameras go off and she's getting dressed up really fancy every day, but she really doesn't have anything to do because they obviously live in a castle, so there's servants that clean. I'd imagine that no animals are allowed in this castle, so she just gets dressed up to drink a glass of wine every night, and she's like, I used to sing and dance with animals, and now I just get dressed up to go nowhere.
Well, obviously, you haven't seen Cinderella 2, because then you would know exactly what she was up to.
Cinderella 2. Cinderella 2. Cinderella Takes Miami.
Yeah. Yeah, that's what happens.
Oh, yeah.
But no, but it's funny. Your piece, she's saying, I used to sing and dance with animals, but now I just get dressed up and do nothing. Or she seems to be sitting at a bar with a half-empty glass of wine, pouting.
Yeah, she's just like not feeling it.
All right, so let's go on to your other one here. Here is Aurora, Miss Sleeping Beauty. It says, I should have stayed in bed. At least my dreams were interesting. So, and she's looks like she's cooking some food with a little apron on, but still in her princess gown.
Yeah. I just, for this piece, I was thinking, that, you know, she was asleep. She really had no idea what was going on in her world, that she was in any danger. And for me, I like to be busy, but I really loves my sleeping because I always have interesting dreams and whatnot. So I just thought it was funny. This prince came along, kissed her, woke her up, was like, "We're getting married. I killed a dragon. You have to marry me." And she's like, "Oh, okay." And then, you know, it's like everyday life of a lot of ladies is just, you know, doing normal housework. I mean, they're out doing jobs and having fun and whatnot, but it's like she's cooking for this guy, she's cleaning, it's probably the same routine every day. So she's like, "Well, why'd I wake up for this? Like, I was having cool dreams, at least."
You'd assume she was having some crazy dreams.
Yeah, so she's like, "Cool, I get to cook food for a guy that's like, don't even see because he's always out saving people from dragons." But he's like, "You better have dinner on the table by 8, Sleeping Beauty."
Yeah, he's quite the dictator.
Yeah.
All right, you know, the next one here, it's Belle and the Beast. Beast, mm-hmm. Who's saying what? I'm sorry, I'm all confused.
It's a cat.
Oh, it's a cat. Oh, no one's saying anything. It's a caption. My bad. Yeah. So the caption says, "Beast like beauty so much more than singing appliances." And it's got a very, very cutesy looking beast, I might say. They look kind of like munchkins almost. But yeah. Belle is on a chain. She's got a, you know, a chain around her neck. She looks enslaved. So what's going on here?
It was the way I felt. Like, I know a lot of people, it's funny, I'm seeing articles about this on Facebook now, how they're like, Beauty and the Beast was a true love story, you know, but I always saw it as kind of a Stockholm Syndrome type love story where her dad messes up by bringing her a flower and she's like, "No, I'll be your prisoner." And Beast is like, "Okay." And like, I get that they fall in love through time, but it's not like she's going to like marry the candle, you know?
Yeah.
So, it was almost like it was Beast's choice to have Belle there with him. Like, she was this new object instead of like her fat dad that was old. And Beast really liked her the most. He probably valued her time over the little servant objects and whatnot. So I thought it was funny take on it to make them both cute. And like, he's like, "I love you." And she's like, "I love you too." And he's like, "But you have to wear this collar and leash because I don't want you trying to jump the fence." And she's like, "Ugh." So he takes her on walks because he loves her and takes her outside and dresses her up nice. But it's like, is she that happy or is it that he's the only guy around? And she's like, "I gotta love something. I guess I love him." Woo. So it's just like a playful take on that whole situation.
Your pictures are so cute. It's so twisted. I keep looking, I'm like, "Oh, this is so adorable." But the subtext is so dark.
Yeah. What I find funny is that piece there, that's a print that I have. The original I sold, it was a painting, and I sold it to this mother wanted to buy it for her daughter, but her daughter was probably about 7 years old. And she's like, "I'm going to get this for you." And I was like, "Does the mom get the joke?" Like,
"Oh, yeah, why do you want to buy it?" Yeah.
Yeah, why do you want to, like, I mean, it was cute. Obviously, it's, like, really cutesy. But I was like, he's kind of walking her, like, but, you know, like, whatever, lady, I'll take it.
it probably went over her head. She probably was like, "Yes, beasts own women. That works in my world."
Yeah. She's like, "They're cute, so my daughter won't get the subcontext until she's a hormonal teenager."
And then she might be into that. So that, you never know where what kind of seed you planted in the children.
Oh, yeah, great.
Anyways, moving on to the next one here. It's your Snow White piece. It says, "I used to live in a castle. Now I live with 7 tiny men who watch me sleep." So, obviously, it's self-explanatory, but you can go a little deeper for us. What inspired this?
Yeah, with that piece, it was, you know, she lived in a castle with just her stepmom for some reason. You never see the dad in that. It never really gets into what happened to her dad or her mom. She's just living with this queen that's obsessed with being beautiful in this like elaborate castle. And yeah, she kind of was rude to Snow White, but Snow White had it pretty nice. It was a nice fancy castle. And then she's like, I'm going to rebel and get out of here because I don't want to listen to her. So she runs off in the woods, and then she ends up, the only people taking her in are seven little creepy dudes that are like, you can sleep in the bed we all used to sleep in, you know? They're like, we'll just sit up all night and watch you sleep because we just think you're the greatest. So it's just like, she went from living in a nice castle to this little shack with these little dudes, and it's like, you don't know what they're doing when she's asleep, and she's just, you know, has to deal with all these animals and nature and stuff, and she's making do with it. But I just always thought it was kind of an odd concept to be like, hey, kids, don't let your stepmom run away from home and go move in with some crazy short dudes. You can always trust strange men with beards. So.
Wow, and I guess I guess that hits a little home for you because you were saying you are a stepmother. So is that?
Oh yeah, yeah.
Is that part of your inspiration?
Yeah, that's part of my inspiration too. Is because I feel like Disney has a vendetta against step parents. Not maybe they don't put it in your face, but it's like. What is it? You know, like, if you're a stepmom, you're automatically going to be evil, so, you know, you can't get attached to the children, or, like, they kind of tell kids to kind of fear stepmoms, and I just think it's funny, because my stepkids tell me all the time, like, you know, we love you, you're the greatest, you know, like, they, because I help basically raise them, so I was always, like, looking out for their best interests, and I wanted to encourage, like, their growth and whatnot, so I just feel like Disney, I should have been, like, tripping them or pushing them downstairs or something, or, you know, like giving them food and then, like, smashing it in front of them and being like, no food for you tonight, I'm the stepmother, ah.
Well, Disney's saying to do that once you poison me and I die.
Yeah, I have to poison him and take his money and his castle.
Right, you gotta start. And then, yeah, step one.
Yeah, and then I just have to be really rude to the children, you know, and just dash their dreams. Anytime they have an idea, just be like, that's horrible, you dummy. So I just, I like to incorporate that kind of humor into it too, because I never seen a Disney movie where the parents are both alive and they're actually the jerks, like, you know.
Right, of the older films, of course.
Yeah, yeah. Like, why aren't they mean? Why can't dad just be like, maybe he's just a little too not there for his princess daughter, or maybe the mom's just really mean and, like, goes out partying with her other queen friends and leaves the kid alone, you know? It's like always the step-parent's just the jerk.
Yeah, that's a weird recurring theme in the early films, but yeah. Never, a step-parent has never been a hero in any of these movies. So, moving on, looking to the future a little bit here, this guy, for both of you guys, is there any other Disney-inspired pieces in the future from either of you?
I'm sure we'll be doing more. I mean, you know, at least five a year is a good dose for me, and she's always taking new takes on the princesses, so.
Yeah, as long as Disney keeps pumping out movies, I think I'm going to be okay on that genre.
Well, yeah, they're still coming.
Yeah.
Don't worry about that. And plus, there's so much material that's already out there to draw inspiration from, too.
Oh, yeah.
So when's the next time you guys are headed to Walt Disney World?
Probably 2 years. We just went maybe 3 weeks ago.
Oh, you just got back, so okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's about 3 weeks ago. It's the end of August.
So I like to take a year, like a, well, 2 years off, basically, and then it seemed a little bit new to me, but, mm-hmm. And I don't know, maybe my kids won't be as pumped to go, maybe they'll just want to go to Universal in 2 years, so we'll see.
Yeah, I definitely would suggest checking that out, especially if you want a break from the Disney present, you know, bubble, as it's called.
Yeah.
So you don't feel like you're in Disney prison. So if people want to find your work, buy some prints, the whole nine, how do people go about doing that?
Probably the best way for me is just go to my website. It's gusfink.com, just my name.com. And, from there, there's, you know, you could buy stuff in there. I just built that new site, and then there's, links to my eBay store where we both sell in the eBay store.
Yeah, I put my stuff in his eBay store because why pay for two stores when you can have one store and sell those?
Right, and if you just search our names on eBay, there's a ton up there, and we're on Instagram, I'm on Twitter, you know, just the classic stuff, Facebook, people. I do a daily Facebook auction, whether it's a toy I created or a print. So, yeah, all kinds of ways on the internet to find us.
Yeah.
Cool. And actually, speaking of which, what other types of work do you do? And you mentioned a little bit that you created your own characters, so maybe you guys could talk a little bit about your non-Disney work.
Yeah, I like to think of ourselves as like a, yeah, like Disney itself, you know, they created all these amazing properties basically, and they license out and all that. And we kind of do the same thing. We have a toy line called the Ghoulie Monsters, and they are started off as capsule toys, but we also do purses of them, and we do.
There's plush of them too.
There's a plush that just got released for them. I've done. My first line was the Boogly Heads, and there's 24 different characters of them, and I'm doing string dolls with them. They're going to be launched in about a week. Those have been. A lot of them were made and sold back in 07, 08, 09, and now they're kind of getting relaunched. They're going to be on some iPad covers, stuff like that. There's a lot. There's two app games called Rocklians. It's Rocklienz. You go to rocklienz.com, you could see the apps, or you could just go to the iTunes store.
Wow.
But
I got to interject here a little bit here. I don't know if they'll keep us on the show or not. I totally was hired. My company was hired to create promo videos for Rocklians.
What? Oh, snap.
Oh, wow. Okay. Yeah,
I love that game. It's so awesome.
Oh, really?
That's
crazy.
Yeah, you got to leave this in the show.
That's such a small world. Wow.
I designed some pencil toppers for the capsule toys, but they're little cute little fat critters that are... There's like a unicorn and a panda and a piggy. It's not like your typical animals where it's like, you know, just boring animals. They have little wings, and hopefully it'll distract children in classes. So there's that, and working on a few different books right now. Just like funny books for parents to really enjoy reading to their kids. You know, like if you read a bedtime story to a child and it's just focused towards the child, it's kind of boring for the parent.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm trying to make it 100% kid friendly, but also entertaining for the parents too. So I'm working on a few different books about that kind of stuff and some comic type things. I have a character that's a fat little unicorn named Chubbles. That he's one of the pencil toppers that's in the flying critters that's coming out. And what else? Gosh, I always do so many different little things.
Wow, you guys have a lot of stuff going on. So this is just the very small part of what you do is these Disney interpretations. Is what it sounds like. It sounds like you have a whole empire of cute, creepy characters.
We really do. Like I like to think of us like Warner Brothers or Disney, but we're just two people doing it and working every day really hard at it. And I just signed some new deals. We're going to be doing emoticons with Line. And I saw Line's now advertising all over Nickelodeon and stuff. So that's hopefully that will help us out.
Yeah.
And they got approved, I heard today. So that's one of the things. And we're just, you know, we have big, big dreams and we're just working every day at it. So
you just got to try it every outlet, you know, see what sticks kind of thing. So
for sure. Wow, very awesome. Well, thank you guys very much for coming on. I appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you. It's been a pleasure. It's great talking with you, James.
Yeah.
Thanks again to Gus Fink and Emmy Boz for coming on and
sharing their art with all of us. If you want to find links to all the things we're talking about, first of all, you want to see all the pictures we're talking about, they will be in the show notes. But if you want to find ways to contact them, that, of course, is GusFink.com. And here's a warning. The creepy days are coming. 31 creepy days of Halloween will be here soon. This October, Creepy Kingdom will be releasing a episode every day, counting down to All Hallows' Eve. Be warned. But before that, once again, I'll remind you of the Creepy Fast Pass meetup. That's right. Creepy Kingdom and Annie and Danny's Fast Pass podcast are joining forces to meet up at Walt Disney World September 26th. Cruise Cup Lounge, Yacht Club Resort, 8 p.m. It's going down. Once again, to RSVP, go to creepyfastpassmeetup.rsvpiFY.com. And while you're surfing the web, be sure to check out my other podcast. The Even James Has a Podcast, which can be found at TheEvenJamesHasAPodcast.com. And for show notes, videos, creepy Disney cosplay, and fan art pics, like the ones we talked about in this episode, links to all of our social media, Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, YouTube, Google+, Tumblr, and Pinterest. Your one-stop shop is CreepyKingdom.com. Creepy Kingdom is available in the iTunes store. There you can rate us, you can subscribe to the show, and you can write us a review. It's all waiting for you right in the iTunes store. And we're available on the Stitcher app, where you can stream podcasts directly to your smart telephone or tablet. No downloading required. Check them out at Stitcher.com. Well, until next time,
keep it creepy.
I have to go now. It's midnight. Pleasant dreams. Ha 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 ha